You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, Chris Lopez here, and today we got a really interesting podcast. We're going to talk about opportunity zones. Now, this is a fairly new term. A lot of people are talking about it. Very few people understand it. But I've got two people here with me today that are actively looking into it, and they know it probably about as well as anyone at the current moment. So I'm going to sit down and pick their brains. So I got Terrence Doyle and Brandon Gossett. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent, Chris. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
And so Terrence and Brandon are with the Value Add Real Estate Company. And I know some of the listeners out there are familiar with your company, some aren't. But Brandon, give our listeners out there like the 60-second rundown on what you and Terrence have built at the Value Add Real Estate Company.
Sure. Terrence and I have known each other for 13 years. We were college teammates. He has been more on the investment side since 2008. I was on the brokerage side since 2013, and we started this company in 2015. We're operating in six states. We have multifamily, short-term flips, apartments, and some land development deals, the whole gamut. And yeah, value-add real estate company.
Yeah. And I mean, give everyone just a little more detail on just the amount of flips you do and the volume, because it's, you really undersold you today. You guys have a very impressive operation.
We have a couple hundred units in Des Moines, Iowa. And we have, we're probably going to do 50 flips in Denver Metro in 2018. And then we have some folks that we've mentored over the years that are, you know, returned to their birthplace where they have their network to go ahead and leverage the skills we've taught them. So they, you know, we mentor them and have weekly calls, and we oversee that operation, help fund it and bring them capital and construction discounts and whatnot.
Great. And I mean, I could talk to these guys about hours about what they've done with their fix and flips in Denver and around the country, and make sure you check out their podcast, some episodes they've been on, we talk about that. But today I want to dive into an opportunity zone and what it is. And I mean, this is complex, guys. Who wants to take the stab at describing what an opportunity zone is?
I will try and describe it in layman's terms, as simply as possible. I thought you did a really good job with the 1031 podcast. So I'm hoping this is a similar benefit for the audience. Real shortly, you know, the opportunity zone, we call them the O-zones. It was a part of the tax code that not a lot of people have talked about. And it could have one of the biggest impacts on low-income neighborhoods and communities around the country.
And sorry, this is the tax code that got passed last year under President Trump, right?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay.
It was passed, and then it's been, it's still being finalized. So there's some details that we'll go into. 90% of it has been hashed out. And basically, it is to incentivize development and redevelopment in specific low-income communities that were handpicked by each state governor. So basically, the Department of Treasury and the cabinet went to all the governors and said, which neighborhoods need the most development? And each state governor got to pick certain areas that were classified as opportunity zones. And that is what an opportunity zone is. It's, and you can buy in there. So the best way to describe it is comparing it to a 1031, which is deferring taxes, right? 1031, you can defer. So an opportunity zone is where you can defer taxes for 5 years, 7 years, or 10 years. So you get a deference on the capital gain. Then you also get a discount. So on year five, you get a 10% discount on the capital gain. On year seven, you get a 15% discount. And at year 10, anything after year 10 that you sell the asset, you would not have to pay any capital gains on the basis.
So you're talking about on the capital gains. So, you know, 1031 is like kind to like kind. So typically you have to, you know, sell real estate, trade it into other real estate. So for opportunity zones, do people have to sell real estate and then essentially 1031 it into an opportunity zone, or where can this money come from?
Yeah, great question. So the money can come from real estate, or it can come from stocks, or it can come from selling a business. Anything that you sell that you have a long-term capital gain qualifies for an investment in the opportunity zone.
So I want to interrupt you because this is a really, really big and important deal. So essentially you're saying anything that is a classify as a long-term capital gain,
yes,
no matter where it comes from, as long as it's a long-term capital gain, can be, I'll say, rolled over into an opportunity zone.
And then those gains are deferred. And then how does this 5, 7, 10 year sliding scale work then afterwards?
Yeah, so that is a good point. That is one of the big difference. One of the big advantages from a 1031 is that it can be from any the sale of any asset. So it can be in the stock market. So a lot of people have asked us over the last 4 months that we've been studying this since 2014, 15. I mean, the New York Stock Exchange is on the largest bull run in the history of the stock exchange. So people will say, oh, I have this unrealized gain in the stock market. Well, let's say they bought Facebook at $25 a share. Now it's at 160. I have this huge unrealized gain, so I can sell that and then take those gains and put them in the opportunity zone and defer my taxes? And the answer is yes. You can sell a farm, you can sell stocks, you can sell a business. Anything that creates a taxable event with a capital gain can be put into these opportunity zones.
Okay.
And the tax is deferred.
We're not tax advisors, but I'm not aware of any instrument out there where you can sell a stock and not pay the capital gains on it.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before.
I don't think there's a 1031 for stocks.
I'm wrapping my head around this because I really know the basics of this from a few conversations I've had with you guys and a few emails that you have sent me over. So I really want to just drill down and make sure I understand this. And that way, if I understand it, our listeners should understand it as well. So let's just say I consult basically anything with long-term capital gains. Let's just say I have $100,000 in long-term capital gains. Mm-hmm. I can take that and buy real estate in an opportunity zone. So two things, what type of real estate does it have to be and where do I find opportunity zones?
Sure. So let's use a real example. You sold energy stocks and had $100,000 long-term capital gain.
Okay.
You have 6 months to invest that into an opportunity zone. That could mean real estate inside an opportunity zone. It could mean a business inside opportunity zone. We are real estate guys. We're just going to talk about that piece. But any sort of activity inside an opportunity zone qualifies. So qualifies, what does that mean? That means you don't have to pay taxes on the $100,000 gain. Rather, you defer taxes on the $100,000 gain.
And do you know, is that at federal and state or?
Federal.
Okay.
So you're still responsible for the state taxes. So the state capital gain taxes is 15 to 22.5%, depending on your tax bracket. You're not responsible for paying those at this time if you have a $100,000 gain and you roll it in within 6 months, 180 days.
So is it kind of like a 1031 where you have, you know, 45 days to identify, then 180 days to close? Or kind of what's the mechanism for identifying and closing?
The practice of how this can be exercised has not been fleshed out by the IRS yet. They promised an opinion letter in the summer of 2018. Still hasn't come out yet. So exactly how you certify that you've followed the rules is not clear yet, but based on the IRS's initial FAQ and the legislation that was passed in December 2017, it appears to be pretty simple, one-page self-certification form that says, yes, I had long-term capital gains, and yes, I invested it in an opportunity zone with 180 days.
So you said a self-certification form. So with a 1031, I have to use a QI or qualified intermediary, but with an opportunity zone, it doesn't sound like one would have to.
It doesn't sound like it. The IRS has not finalized the process, but the expert opinion out there is that it's much simpler than a 1031. There's no third party involved, and you're not having to identify the property ahead of time. As long as you roll it in on that 180th day, you qualify for deferral. So you will eventually have to pay that capital gain. If you keep your $100,000 invested in that opportunity zone for 5 years, you'll be responsible for 90% of the gain that you would have had to pay 5 years earlier.
Ooh, sorry, back up and say that again. So I got my $100,000. I sell whatever stock I had, binds an opportunity zone. And at 5 years, let's just say it's appreciated for simplicity, $10,000. That's my gain in that. Horrible return, but for simplicity, that $10,000, I would owe 90% on that. 10 grand or 90% on the original 100 grand or what?
So if you have a $100,000 gain, and let's just say you're in the 15% capital gain bracket, you would have to pay $15,000 to the federal government for your long-term capital gain. 15 to 22.5% is what it would be. But let's say it's 15. Rather than having to pay that $15,000 gain, you would put $100,000 into a qualified opportunity fund or a qualified opportunity zone investment. And that $15,000 owed to the IRS would become 13,500 after 5 years.
Because that would be the 90%.
Yeah, you get a 10% discount as long as you hold it 5 years.
And then at year seven, you get another 5% discount.
Okay.
And then, again, this hasn't been fully fleshed out by the IRS yet, but December 31st, 2026, you are then responsible to pay that capital gain. If you kept it in for 7 years, you would owe 85% of 15 grand in our example. Or whatever the earlier of when you got out of that opportunity zone, or December 31st, 2026.
Say that last sentence again. I didn't quite follow that.
So the 15 grand that you would owe now, don't pay. You don't have to. You can roll it into an opportunity fund or in an opportunity zone. Let's say in 5 years, you need your money for something. When you take it out of the opportunity zone, you will be responsible to pay that deferred capital gain that you owe the IRS. But you only pay 90% of it because you're getting a 10% discount on what you owe.
Okay. And then 7 years, it's a 15% total.
Yeah, an additional five. So if it's 7 years, you'd pay 85% of 15 grand in our example.
And what about at year 10?
Well, on December 31st, 2026, you'd have to pay the 13,000-ish, in our example, 85% of what you'd have to pay. So you basically get, if this happened this year, you'd get to kick the bucket down the road for 8 years, then be responsible for 85% of what you would have had to pay today. The most powerful piece of this legislation, though, is, you know, the tax deferral is great and the discount is fine. I mean, it's good, but it's not, you know, the 15% discount on the 15 grand isn't going to change your life. It's helpful and you'll take it if you can, right? But the most powerful thing about this is that if you've owned this asset in the opportunity zone for 10 years, you don't have to pay any capital gains on what you made on that investment. You're still responsible for what you kicked down the road in 2018. You still will pay that at some point. The IRS will get its money on that capital gain, but they will not get anything from what you earned inside the fund.
Okay, I think I'm following here. So let's say I get that $100,000 I invested. I understand how that works. Now let's say I just made $100,000 in my investment over 10 years. And when I turned to sell that from $100,000 in real estate, I would pay zero.
So there's a couple important caveats to this. The first one is it has to be, this is suited for development and redevelopment. So the bread and butter of our business is flipping homes or apartments. So what we're learning is this is really suited for development and redevelopment, which means you're buying a building or houses that are in a qualified opportunity zone and you're either scraping them or you're repurposing the building. And let's say we buy a building for $1 million, right? To qualify for the opportunity fund, within 30 months of the purchase, we have to put in the basis dollar for dollar. So if we buy a building for $1 million, 30 months after the purchase date, we have to have invested $1 million into the improvement of that building.
Okay, into the improvement.
At a minimum of a dollar for a dollar. You can go over a dollar, so I can put $1.5 million in or $2 million in, but I have to at minimum put $1 million by 30 months of the purchase date.
Okay.
So after 10 years, so let's say we buy a building for $1 million, we put $1 million into it. Year 10, now we're into the building for $2 million, that's our basis, and we sell that building for $3 million. So now we have $1 million in gain, and we don't have to pay any federal taxes on the gain, which is really the most powerful piece of this tax incentive, which is what separates it, one of the ways it separates it from a 1031.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing because, I mean, the 1031, you can never really realize that gain until you die and let your heirs get it. But this way, you can actually realize the gain while you're still hopefully alive.
Yeah, at least you have a 10-year shot clock where you know I can sell it.
Okay.
And at that point, yeah.
I got so many questions to ask you guys. So I know what development is. How does redevelopment differ from flipping?
Yeah, redevelopment, I mean, which is what Brandon and I have been learning the last 4 months of how difficult it is. So redevelopment essentially means we're buying the asset, let's say as an office building, and we're repurposing it for, let's say, apartments or a hotel or a restaurant or storage. And so it's taking an asset and changing it, making it different enough to where it's now used for the use has been changed. And normally that's a very rigorous process going through, depending on what city and municipality you live in. You know, you have to get it approved by the city. Then you have to get, you know, plans from a general contractor and an architect and soils test and a survey. I mean, it's very extensive, but it accomplishes the government's goal of taking you know, lower income neighborhoods and now bringing them up. And like Brandon said, this also goes for businesses, which we're not going to touch on that, but you're going to have these neighborhoods that are low income and now having millions and millions, you know, the goal is to have millions of dollars poured into them, both to build new structures, but then to change existing structures, which is, you can, you know, we live in Denver and, you know, where some of the opportunity zones are, there's some pretty rough neighborhoods. And, you know, if you went in there and repurposed some of those areas, I mean, it could be, you know, you could end up having the Highlands or Pearl Street in some of the lower income areas of Denver, which would be really cool.
You can't buy a convenience store and keep running the business. It won't qualify. You'll fail the 30-month test and then it won't, you won't get any of, you'll still.
The 30-month test is the improvement test.
Yeah. You have to spend as much as you paid for the initial asset within 30 months.
So I could still buy an asset with financing.
Yes.
Right. With, you know, 25%, 30% down, normal commercial financing. But then in the next 30 months, I have to put in additional capital for improvements that met the original purchase price.
Yeah. And it's not the cash in, it's the purchase price.
Okay.
So if you got a loan, you still having to, you have to double your basis. You can't just match the cash that you put for a down payment, for example.
Now, can you use, I mean, can you do financing for the improvements? Can I take out an improvement loan or construction loan?
Absolutely.
Okay.
This legislation was two paragraphs. There was very little caveat, and then the IRS has a one-page FAQ. So if you want to read the source material from the government, you can do that in 30 minutes. Now, since then, there's a slew of resources online, experts, tax opinion, you know, the national CPA organization that got together and submitted a long essay to the IRS asking a million questions about how they actually implement this and how do they serve their clients and how do they account for it and how do they defer the taxes and all that. And the IRS has not responded yet. So there's a lot of unanswered questions right now, but the legislation itself was very simple and had really no carve-outs. It was pretty plain black and white. There's still a few key questions like, can someone invest non-capital gain dollars and receive the 10-year benefit? That's a big question that's out there that the legislation was not clear on. There's some other questions, but that's probably the biggest one out there.
One of the other questions that's interesting is like on larger, because the goal is, right, to gentrify older low-income neighborhoods. And let's say you're buying up a whole block or doing a large apartment building or condo project or restaurant or an office, a mixed use office building, and let's say it's a $100 million project. Well, it's conceivable to say that you could not have put dollar for dollar of the basis in within the 30 month period, right? And so there's things like that that they have, there's some details, but the majority, the bulk of the incentive has been ironed out. There are some smaller details like what to do with cash. Let's say you have $1 million capital gain, you put it into qualified opportunity zone fund, and the cash is sitting there for 6 months. And they say that they're going to test it every 6 months, the business, the fund, right? Let's say you set one up.
What do you mean test it?
They're going to check and see how much money has been put in for improvements.
Okay.
To make sure that 90%, because to qualify for an opportunity zone fund, 90% of the assets have to be in a opportunity zone, and it can't be more than 10% cash sitting in the account. That's what they've said. So there's certain things like that that they need to iron out, because if it's a large construction project, it's difficult to see all of that money being invested within the first 30 months and not be sitting in cash. So that gets into some of the details, which aren't important right now for most of the audience. But there, I think the punchline is that the IRS, it's still very new. They're still ironing out some of the minor details, but it's still a massive opportunity that we're really intrigued with. And we think that a lot of people should be aware of it.
And do you guys know, I mean, this is really good explanation so far. Like, this is really, really getting my gears turning in my brain. Are people actively taking advantage of opportunity zones so far? Is everyone kind of like on the sidelines waiting to see what happens? Do you guys know anything like that?
I'm sure. I worked at Oppenheimer Funds for 6 years. I'm sure the big institutional players are going to put together opportunity funds. But right now they're still figuring out some of the finer details. There's still a big education piece. This is a new kind of legislation. There's been, 15 years ago, there's something similar that encouraged investment in lower income neighborhoods that provided some tax incentive. This, you know, that legislation was like 100 pages and this was two paragraphs. So this is like, lean and mean government, which is good. And, but it also provides a lot of, you know, that they had all the questions ironed out. In this case, not yet, hopefully soon. So a lot of those players are sitting on the sidelines, but, you know, Denver Post released a big article like 2 months ago about this. You know, the word is out. People weren't talking about this in December. They were talking about the business pass-through tax.
Yeah.
And this was kind of a hidden part of the, I mean, it wasn't hidden, but this was a non-publicized part of the whatever Tax Cuts and Jobs Reform Act of 2017 that no one was talking about until this summer.
So, I mean, where, since the most of our listeners are Denver based, where are some opportunity zones in Denver or around Colorado? Are there a couple, or are there a dozen, or are there hundreds?
There's lots.
Yeah. So one of the largest land ozones, like as far as square feet, is in Denver. And we can provide the map, and there's a website that the legislation in Colorado provided. And where we've been looking and seeing is there's a large one in Lakewood, and we can give the streets. Brandon knows the streets better than I do. Lakewood, Inglewood, and then Denver. And the Denver one is off Colfax around the Mile High area. And the Lakewood one is right along the Sheridan. And the Inglewood one, I'm not sure the cross streets, Inglewood, it's near the hospital.
Inglewood has a huge opportunity zone. There's lots of parcels that qualify. Basically, probably like 40% of Inglewood is technically an opportunity zone, which is really surprising.
Wow.
And anything south of Hamden and east of Broadway is on that map for the most part, with a couple exceptions. And then, like Terrence said, you know, north of 6 and south of Colfax, between like Federal and Sheridan, is a big opportunity zone tract. And North Denver, you know, north of I-70, and everyone talked about the I-70 redevelopment. Well, you could double dip there. And then, you know, north unincorporated Adams County, North Denver, with like I-76 and I-70, that interchange that has 15 opportunity zone tracks. So Denver was very generous with its opportunity zone tracks, especially, and we've looked in other markets that we have staff, and Denver is the biggest, which is kind of surprising. You know, Denver, everyone talks about, you know, you wouldn't think that we would need economic revitalization in 20% of the metro, but it's about 20% of the metro.
It's that big?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I think if you look at a map,
the land area is large.
Yeah, it's about 20% of the tracks qualify.
It's also interesting. There's also like a couple streets in Cherry Hills that are considered ozone. You know, there's some head scratching areas too, but most of it is low income and areas that either have had revitalization going on the last couple of years, or you can see this could be an area that needs it.
And so this was going back to what you guys earlier were describing it. So this is a federal law, but then the state governor is officially who gets to designate what happened here in Colorado and other states?
Yeah, as of March, what we had was there was 126 tracks that were approved, and it was in 20 states and 4 territories. I think now I read an article that it was 25 states, because there are some other governors that are trying to come on board, and the IRS is approving or looking at those, the Department of Treasury and
Florida. Yeah, Florida released theirs like 3 weeks ago, and we have some operations there, and we were like checking every few days to see if they had released it, and they did at end of August.
So by checking the release, you're just like hitting refresh on Chrome to see if they update it? Is that pretty much
I haven't slept in months. I just keep refreshing.
See if we're missing something.
Okay, so this is getting even more interesting. So it's still, I mean, I know the writing the regulations is still very fluid and
right
coming. So, but even states are still have the ability, hey, we want to throw our hat in the ring and say, here are these ozones, and they could just announce it whenever.
And who knows what conversations were going on. Maybe they might have asked for an extension to say, hey, we need to check with our local municipalities to see which areas are low income that need it. Like, for instance, I'm from Des Moines, Iowa. You know, the ozone in Des Moines, Iowa is near Drake University, but there's not really any place to redevelop there. It's already been developed, and there's a large university there with housing and bars and restaurants. So it's interesting. Some governors, you can tell, spent a lot of time with their local mayors and councilmen to say, hey, where is this needed? And let's be really thorough.
That's a good point. Like, I think it's pretty clear that Iowa didn't understand what they didn't understand the legislation, because they picked these areas that like you can't, you can't like tear down these buildings.
Yeah. No one's going to go in there and buy half of Drake University and redevelop it. And there were some other places in Des Moines. Right. But that was the majority of it. And then Valley Junction So for your listeners in Des Moines, Iowa, I mean, there's probably not going to be a lot of use of this incentive. Denver, on the other hand, I think as developers get more comfortable with it, I think you will see a lot of development and redevelopment taking advantage, because you can tell that it was thought through and they did a good job planning. And I think other governors maybe are still in that process, and that's why you're seeing them get approved later.
But just to sum it up, in what you guys have researched so far and seen, it sounds like Colorado and Denver has done a pretty good job of defining these opportunity zones.
I think so. In my opinion, yes.
Yeah.
And so just real quickly, any other states or areas that have it or that don't have it that you're surprised? Just kind of what's the lay of the land at the 50,000 foot level looking down the map of the U.S.? Or do you guys even know? I know that's a tough question.
We've looked in Charleston. I think those are some attractive areas. We've looked in Louisville, Kentucky. I think there's some properties there that Louisville, Kentucky, I think has a large land area tract that we've looked at. You've looked at Dallas and Florida more than me.
It does seem to skew urban, because there's certainly poorer counties and poorer tracts than like the 90th percentile of poor tracts in Denver is still better off than La Junta, Colorado. But yeah, that's not. So I'm not sure the criterion they used. They picked this is where we want dollars to flood into, out of state and in-state dollars. And I'm not sure in their infinite wisdom how they selected those. Denver is definitely the most generous, like we said. And there's some states that clearly didn't get it. We have a bigger operation in Des Moines than in Denver, and we can't find a single, we couldn't even imagine a situation where we could do a deal there because of how they selected their tracks. It doesn't make any sense. No one would want to develop where they are incentivizing you to.
And so I think I know this, but I just want to make sure I get all the details fleshed out. I mean, what's the main reason the federal and the state and the local government offer this type of incentive? It is, if they were up there campaigning and trying to tell what they're doing, what would that slogan or 30-second commercial say about, hey, we opportunities are going to do this for my constituents?
Make Villa Park great again.
Make Swansea great again. I think the punchline is it's going to create jobs and more tax dollars for cities and states and the government. I think, the more money that flows into areas that currently do not have restaurants, bars, or businesses, the more money that flows in there to expedite that process, then the more jobs are created there, the more people want to move there, and the more people are going to spend money there. So I think at the end of the day, they're trying to increase the dollars that people make and the dollars that people spend.
So is there is this just going to be, is there a sunset provision on this law? Is it just indefinite, or do people have to get invested by year X or something?
Well, they haven't fleshed this out, but if you invested in January 2020, then it appears that you wouldn't be able to qualify for the 7-year rule, because the tax will come due December 31st, 2026. The 10-year rule will still apply, but as far as, eventually you have to pay the piper on the existing gain, and that is sunsetting December 2026. Wouldn't net the gain on your opportunity zone investment that does not have a sunset period. So this legislation is good through 2026. You should be able to qualify for the 10-year rule up until then, but your 10 and 15% discount on your tax burden, there's a sunset on that.
Okay. And do you know, and this is just a very off the wall question, because I know a lot of real estate investors use self-directed IRAs to invest. And, we all know the tax deferral advantages of IRAs and 401ks and stuff. Do you know, can self-directed IRAs, can money be taken out of there and put into opportunity zones, or can you invest within a self-directed IRA? Have you heard anything about that?
No, I don't see how you could, because you wouldn't have a long-term capital gain in an IRA, right?
Because it's already deferred. You could take a self-directed 401k and invest it in there, but it wouldn't qualify for any of the tax advantages, but you could, just because you thought the area was going to appreciate. Any dollars can go in. I think it's only a capital gain.
I can't see a scenario where retirement funds would make sense for anybody.
Okay.
So the big question for us is the biggest outstanding question, which a lot of the tax experts are saying the answer is no, but can someone take non-capital gain dollars and experience the 10-year benefit?
I want to kind of throw a few questions out here. So I'll say for the average investor, just an individual investor, what opportunities do they have for opportunity zones? I mean, how much money does one need to go out there and buy in the opportunity zone, or does it just depend on the deal within the ozone?
Yeah, I don't think there is a threshold. I think what I would encourage everyone to do is to read on it, because there's new things being published every month. We're continuing to learn this. We were made aware in February or March, so we've had a little bit of a head start from the general public, but we're still learning and reading opinions on this every week to try and answer some of the questions that we have. For the everyday Joe, I think the important thing is to read and to be aware of where they live in relation to an opportunity zone or any of their investment properties, because I think naturally you're going to have a tide that's going to rise in some of those areas as dollars start to pour in. So I think the first thing is just to read, be aware. And if you do have a long-term capital gain taxable event and you have some dollars, to be planning and looking and see if there's some homes in the area you can buy that you could qualify for, that you could get bank financing for. Because at the end of the day, if you get bank financing for the purchase of a home in an opportunity zone that you're going to tear down, you're probably not a lot of money you need to just purchase the home. I think the money comes in when it comes to the redevelopment. So maybe you could get some friends together. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunity. I think the first thing is just to be aware and to read up on it and to know. I'm assuming that most of your audience already has some real estate investing experience, so they probably have assets around town, and just to be aware of where those are at in relation to the opportunity zones and how that could affect either them purchasing other properties in those areas or maybe selling, liquidating some of those properties to buy more in other areas. That's probably the takeaway.
So you're almost saying, if I'm hearing this right, it's just, I mean, even if, like, you know, I'll say, you know, the average investor can't invest a large amount of money, to still ride the trends of, hey, this is an ozone, it's probably going to get a lot of money thrown out there and maybe be the next Rhino or whatever.
Right.
Hey, hedge your bets if you got something over here, something over there, like keep that in consideration.
Yeah, this legislation was not built for mom and pop to go scrape their next door neighbor and build brand new development. Yeah. It's built for funds, but there's no funds that I'm aware of yet. There's not a retail fund, but whenever that day comes, there will be a retail fund. Like I said, I've worked in the financial services industry. A retail fund will come along and mom and pop can put in their whatever $5,000 minimum and experience the tax gains. That's definitely coming. I'm sure we'll see it in 2019 once some things are fleshed out and the big institutional capital managers are more comfortable with the how the IRS is going to treat it.
And you think this might be just kind of similar as like a mutual fund or a REIT, where I can go onto my Vanguard account, sell some gains, and then go buy and type in my stock ticker and then go buy a fund? And
right. There'll be an ozone REIT in the next 6 months.
Or yeah, an existing REIT that'll have a PIP.
Yeah, or enough. Yeah, an existing REIT will, sure. They need to get 90% of their assets in opportunity funds. So, you know, you'll need to be in the right position if you're a REIT manager out there. I'm sure they're all aware of it. And the reason we haven't seen it yet is because the legislation was so skinny that there's still enough unanswered questions that money managers are not comfortable yet soliciting funds for it, is my guess.
So as you guys research this, because I know, I mean, and to give everyone context, like, I know these guys' background, they're incredibly impressive. They got an incredible operation here, and you guys are exploring new opportunity with these ozones. What was the biggest surprise that you learned from spending months of researching and talking with people about opportunity zones?
I think one of the, what's interesting is, you know, we know a lot of residential and commercial brokers in town just from being in the business for 10 years. And not a lot of people, even in the business day to day, that would say they're a real estate investor or broker, knew about this. So I think that was the first thing that really struck me, was that even people that are living, eating, breathing real estate every day weren't aware of it. I think the other thing that's interesting is just how much time and energy and finances it takes to pull off like development at scale. I think that's one of the things, as we've met with other developers, as we're researching ourselves and we're trying to figure out, hey, is this something we could do? Is this something we should try and do? What would this look like for us to try and pivot from flipping to doing some development? Is the amount of due diligence and research and just time and capital intensive it is. to do this kind of real estate investing. You know, what Brandon and I do right now, we make decisions in 24 hours, basically. That's like one of the pillars of our business. Someone brings us a deal, you know, we'll have an offer in 24 hours. And we can underwrite really, really quickly. And in this...
we'll get back to you in 24 months.
Yeah, we may not even know in 6 months if we can do the deal because we're waiting to hear back from the city or something's pending. They're looking at plans, they're reviewing. As we've met with multiple developers and said, hey, what is this? What does your business look like when you're underwriting land or underwriting a redevelopment? How do you, what's that process look like? I mean, they're in these deals for 6, 8, 10, 12 months, sometimes years before they've even like broke ground. And that's kind of like a foreign language to Brandon and I. We don't, I mean, 24 months.
We've turned 100 homes in 24 months.
It's, or we've bought 100 units and turned all of them, returned the units, and now it's sold, you know, and someone else owns it. So 24 months for us is an eternity, but in development or redevelopment, that's like you're just getting started. You know, you're just out of the start. Sometimes you haven't even left the starting blocks in that. So I think that's been probably some of the biggest surprise to me.
Yeah. So I'm looking at my questions and I got just, so the listeners know, I've got just a page scribbled with notes. I think I answered all my questions. I got a very broad understanding of this, knowing that I personally have no action I'm taking on this tomorrow once I stop this recording, go out there, but I'm definitely keeping my eye on there.
Right.
Did I miss any questions? Are you guys going to have final thoughts or things you want to clarify that we talked about in the last 30 minutes?
Yeah, if you Google 1400Z2, that's the reference of this actual legislation.
Kind of like the way 1031 is the IRS legislation. So 1400Z2.
Yes.
Okay.
And you also, you know, Opportunity Zone or Ozone. So if you want to Google it, that's the best way to find it. Yeah, if you even Google Opportunity Zone, you'll still not get very many results. 1400Z2 is the best way to get specific results.
Great. And I'm assuming you guys are, I mean, you're keeping your fingers on the pulse of this, you're watching this so we can keep up to date with you, kind of take the advantage of the months of you sitting there hitting refresh on your web browser and pick your brains, right?
Our pain is your gain.
I like that.
Our goal is to document this. We're going to be doing some videos, probably posting some podcast pictures, videos of land that we're looking at, us going through the process. We are going to try and do some of this stuff and we're going to document it to share it to really just educate the public on how to take advantage of it and what our experience was. I think one more thing from notes and research that we did, the number one question I get from anyone that I talk to this about is, how is it different or better? Like, why wouldn't I just do a 1031? And I think one of the other major advantages that Scott Grimm, who's an accountant in town that's helped advise us, and he puts it really well, so I'm just going to read from the notes I took, is that in a 1031, you have to invest 100% of the proceeds. So if I sell a building and the proceeds, not just the gain, but the proceeds are $1 million, I have to take $1 million and go invest that within 6 months. Yes. And with the Ozone, it's just the capital gain. So if I sell a business for $1 million, but the capital gain is only $200,000, I only have to invest $200,000 into the Opportunity Zone.
Oh, really?
So it's a massive, massive difference and advantage.
You don't have to invest $200. You can invest $100 and then pay taxes on the other $100. It's very flexible. A 1031 is not flexible. It's not favored by the IRS. The IRS looks for reasons to destroy and blow up your 1031 and send you a letter saying you owe taxes because you did something wrong. This legislation appears to be highly favored, very easy to participate in. And yeah, the fact that you don't have to invest a whole million, you can invest $100,000 and then pay taxes on the rest, you know, whatever you're comfortable with. It's a lot of flexibility so far. And if the IRS changes that, there'll be, you know, there'll probably be a big uproar because their job is to interpret, not make law, right? They're basically interpreting a very open-ended strategy. And there's not really wiggle room for them to make it difficult because the legislation was so open-ended.
So that's something to, you know, as listeners are sitting there thinking, well, why would I go through all this hassle? Why is the Ozone really worth it? I mean, these are some of the details of how it's different from a 1031 that make it very attractive. So you get the discount, you get to defer your taxes the same way, which, as Brandon said, is not going to change your life, but it's nice. Everyone will pick up a 10 to 15, you know, they'll take a discount when they can get it. And then no third party. After 10 years, you can sell it with no capital gain. And then the other one is, that's really important, is you do not have to invest the entire proceeds of the taxable event. So you sell a business, sell a stock, sell a real estate, It's just the capital gain. Whatever you would have to write a check to the government as the capital gains tax, that is all you have to invest in the opportunity zone. So that's, I think, one of the last pillars of this that is different from a 1031. That's an advantage that's even more incentivizing to take advantage of.
I'm curious, have you guys talked to any like 1031 QIs about this? Because this is almost, I mean, this is not good for their business model from the little bit I understand. Like, I mean, I know it's not going to wipe away 1031s, but I mean, have you guys gotten the 1031 QIs perspective? I'm just really curious.
I mean, if there's a good retail ozone fund out there, I could see a scenario where people are like, why would I go through the hassle of a 1031 when I can just give it to this experienced investor who is killing it in these opportunity zones? And I get all the same deferral benefits, plus the discount, plus the flexibility. We have never actually done one ourselves, but it's, you know, what is it, $600 to $1,200 transaction fee from the, yeah. Right? So, yeah, I mean, I could definitely see in a couple of years that that business is hurting. If retail money managers do this well, then yeah, I could see where people stop 1031ing for at least until this legislation expires in 2026.
One thing that would be interesting as I was, you know, as I've been thinking on both sides, like why would I do one or the other? I think one of the nice things about 1031 is that you get to control every piece of it yourself.
Yeah.
And you know, like let's say you 1031 from a duplex into a fourplex. Well, now all that cash flow is coming to you and you didn't have to go through rezoning, entitlement, surveying, anything really difficult.
There's no impact on the cash flow, just to be clear. Like that's pay, you pay, you know, if you build a fourplex, the rent that comes to you isn't tax preferred or anything. It's you pay taxes as normal. It's all about the sale of the asset in 10 years that's free.
Right. But 1031, you know, people that are looking at 1031, if they have whatever the amount of money is, the nice thing that you get there is the control and the simplicity. So I think there's always going to be room for that. I can't see it making a big dent on that business because that is the big advantage 1031 has is you can basically do it in-house yourself without having to go and restructure a block or anything like that. So that's those are the advantages. That's why 1031 will still not be greatly impacted.
That makes sense, yeah.
The passive investor who doesn't trust their money with other people will still do the 1031.
Yeah. Great. Well, gentlemen, I mean, I probably speak for many listeners out there. Thank you for doing all this research. I mean, I've done, you know, my 20, 30 minute fits of Googling stuff out there before, and that's kind of like get surface answers and can't figure it out. And this last, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes has just been extremely insightful. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us on. And we're excited to keep learning and seeing what we pick up.
And for those of you listeners out there that don't know these guys, I will put a link in the show notes to your website, thevareco.com is your website. And also, I know you'll put a lot of content on there. And then Terrence, you post a lot of videos to your Instagram account. And I think, I know you do a lot of your fix and flip videos, but I imagine as we do some documenting of the opportunity zones, you'll be posting it there as well, right?
Yeah, I'm excited to, when we get, we're trying to do some development in a couple areas in Denver. And once we get cranes in the air and stuff, we'll definitely be posting it on there. So stay tuned.
Great. What's your handle?
It's at Terrence Doyle, T-E-R-R-A-N-C-E, Doyle, D-O-Y-L-E, all one word.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.